The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY10 with no spaces. You'll save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout to save some scratch. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this miserably named podcast series. But the QA is the important part because that obviously stands for question and answer. And I like to make this an interactive conversation about the top tech news stories. It's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday, get a feel for the news that's been out over the last week, and see, like, you know, as we look beyond just tracking headlines and some of the outrage mechanics on social media, if we can keep an eye on stories as they evolve. I'm already seeing an amazing group here in this live chat. I'm seeing from Heike to Gormlord, Q3 Becker, Al Spockley, Dave Burns, Paul Puri, Vazikos, Gary the Fireman, Tech Valor, JMX Warrior, and Michael McCorcoran3. And Al Spockley has already jumped in with a bunch of tier one subs that I got to give a shout out to. Got to say a major thank you as Al Spockley is gifting out to Clifton Thomas, Alpha Glicks, Endless SC, It's Thexy Pat, and Dolly Spectra. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for supporting production. Gary the Fireman is subscribed for another subscribed with Prime for another month. Paul Puri, he said my name, squee. Oh, and Gary the Fireman gifting a sub out to JMX Warrior. It blows me away, and I love having these conversations, and I love starting my week off by getting to nerd out with you fine folks. So the support and the participation, always greatly appreciated. We've got a really interesting show this week. It's a little news heavy. Not quite as much for the gadget block, as I'm kind of moving between a few things and I'm under embargo for a couple things. So there's some stuff that I can't talk about just yet. But I'm really excited because I really do want to try and preach more getting more use out of our gadgets. I just had like another infuriating experience in the YouTube comments where, like, I can't believe they're real. At this point, I'm pretty sure people are just trolling. You know, someone was dropping in on one of my videos where I was talking about like Samsung versus OnePlus. And you're like, well, I don't care about SD cards, headphone jacks. I prefer lower resolution displays. They said it that way. I prefer lower resolution displays. I don't care that the CPU is throttled on Samsung. I don't care that it plays games worse than the S20. And obviously, the S20 aesthetics were garbage. And you're like, you don't care about features. You don't care about performance. You're spending more on a phone to do what? And so this is like what passes for enlightened techie conversations in the comments on my videos. And I just feel like this is a community of people that, especially those of us in the chat, I feel like we've walked away from. Like you contribute nothing to this conversation, and you're wasting everyone's time with comments like these. And like, there's no sort of self-awareness. Like, I'm happy to spend more on a phone of which I use for nothing. Excuse me. So, yes, I have been encouraging doing more, you know, finding those opportunities where pulling out a phone might actually be faster, more efficient, or more discreet than working on a laptop or going to a tablet. And that really came to a head. I put out a video. This is the phone challenge. Where is my Firefox? I keep moving around my OBS settings. So I did phone challenge, record a podcast, and this was also a fun giveaway with Rode microphones. The giveaway is over, but the challenge still stands. You've got this amazing, magical pocket supercomputer, and it's got these phenomenal microphones built into it. And I'm saying this broadly. I'm not saying this to people who own $1,500 phones. I'm saying this to everybody. You know, the amount of compute power, the quality of microphone, the larger displays, bigger batteries, like all of this filters down to like those of you using like a Stylo, you know, like an LG K series, a Galaxy A series. You're not left out of the discussion here. I'm speaking to you just as much as I'm speaking to someone who just bought a Galaxy S21 Ultra. I want to see that excitement again. And it makes me really sad. It makes me really sad that like when I talk to my family and friends that like when it's time for them to upgrade a phone, it's not an upgrade. It's an exhaustion point. It's like they are just not into the idea of switching to a new phone, and it's a hassle and it's expensive and it's going to do the same things my old phone did. And we're losing people along the way. People are getting left behind. You can put out every keynote and every, you know, unpacked event and every something special and talk about, oh, you're getting amazing power. Look at this unlabeled bar graph. It's like three times longer than the next bar graph that's unlabeled. And that's the power that you're getting. But if we're not really joining that conversation in earnest to help people get that power, you know, put that horsepower down at the wheels, then it's all a waste. And all of this literally is just e-waste, replicating the same functionality that we've had before. So phone challenge is kind of this little baby idea in the back of my head that maybe this needs to be a new direction for the kind of commentary that I make, the kind of conversations that I hold, and trying to encourage that participation, like point blank. I've been saying you can do more with your phone. Maybe I need to be showing more. You can do more with your phone. So Phone Challenge Podcast is on my channel. And I was really encouraged to see another content creator jump in and say, hey, I want to do a phone challenge too. So my challenge was for the month of April. It kind of came at the end of April. But Scott Peachy, technically speaking, is going to jump in for Phone Challenge May. And so for the month of May on his channel, he's got his own phone challenge. The video went up over the weekend, and we've got a video that we're going to play during the podcast where Scott and I have a conversation about, you know, some of his experiences, where he came to this, why he's ripping my idea off and just stealing it for his own personal benefit on his own channel with my wholehearted approval and blessing. And this is something I want to see snowball. I'm kind of bugging TK. Like, I'm kind of needling him a little in the side saying, hey, you know, we've got Phone Challenge May. What are we going to do for Phone Challenge June? And I'm hoping that we'll encourage him to put something up on his channel. So after the subreddit plug, we're gonna cut to a conversation between me and Scott and really roll into we got to do something. We've got to change something. The current method, the current flavor of talking about consumer tech is increasingly limited. And for how expensive these things are and how incredible they really are, we need to be doing a better job of reaching out and broadening our community and encouraging more people to join these kinds of conversations rather than being the snarky, obnoxious gatekeepers who sit off to the side with $900 phones who don't do anything with the phones. But it's nice to own a $900 phone, I guess. So, Aditya NL, TK needs to step up. We need him to mobilize his viewers and possibly get Arabic TechTube in on the game. I feel like that's going to be my new voice for Aditya. I like that. It's got like some oomph behind it. Let's see, the next comment that Aditya puts out, I'm gonna read like that too. I'm gonna wait for it. I'm not gonna wait that long for it. No, let's jump into some housekeeping. You guys, apologies again. Like, whatever is going on in Southern California, my allergies are still wrecking me. So I might be a little loopy again today. Just antihistamines, not a lot of sleep. It's been a lot. I'm also trying to put together like a quick look at the new place that we're going to be moving to. Hey, Heike, I'm doing okay. Just happy to see you guys. Hope you're well. Like Aditya needed to end that with like, say hey to your mother for me. Chatty boy saying 17 minutes for housekeeping. Dave Burns has no faith in me at all. 25 minutes. So part of housekeeping is actually following up on some of these conversations that I've been having with some of my videos. Podcast challenge was a really big deal for me. That video didn't do a ton of traffic, but I hooked up with Rode microphones. It was a fun giveaway. I can't tell you, for those of you who really did participate, it was incredible. It really was kind of magical listening through the different podcast submissions that I got. And there were these wonderful, like, human conversations. Excuse me. The winner, Saeed Ted and Crystal, like, they put together just a wonderful, it's just a beautiful human conversation, an organic interview, and talking about the high points and the low points over the last year. It really kind of warmed my soul. You know, I'm not telling people like you got to go out and monetize and be content creators and all this stuff, but like, you know, just listening to people take the challenge seriously, and then they ended up with a piece of audio. And maybe they'll never listen to it ever again. Maybe, you know, like in 30 years, they'll be like, oh yeah, that was a weird year. Hey, yeah, that's right. We recorded that thing about it. They could go back and listen, like a little time capsule. You know, as I get older and you know, sort of more sentimental, that kind of stuff is huge. So let's knock out what little housekeeping, because I've been on other projects and because I've been trying to wrap stuff up. Last week was a little lighter for me. I had to front load a lot of review work, but we did get to spend some time playing with the Black Shark 4. So a gaming phone, my first experience with the Snapdragon 870. And that was kind of the main focus of the video and the podcast. Not the podcast, the video and my blog post. Words are hard. So I've got a video out, Black Shark 4 gaming phone, premium performance, mid-range price. And then that's backed up by my Black Shark 4 by the benchmarks, a monster mid-ranger. And for a phone that retails MSRP at $499, this is an interesting comparative conversation. You know, you're really close to the pricing on a one-year-old premium phone. The SoC is a minor tweak, kind of a refresh to the top-of-the-line chipset from Qualcomm last year. There are some very specific, focused gaming benefits. But then we're also kind of just in the same ballpark as like a Poco. So if you're familiar with all of the various permutations of Xiaomi devices, which I'm still getting up to speed, like I'm lost looking at the greater Xiaomi landscape. You know, spec for spec, this is very, very close to a phone that's less expensive. You can get most of this experience going with a Poco, but a few of the things that you just can't replicate anywhere else. So this conversation isn't as easy as, well, it's got the same Snapdragon 870. You should just get a Poco. It's pretty much the same thing. because, you know, a Black Shark is a gaming phone, that doesn't mean high refresh rate display anymore. Tons of phones, especially mid-rangers, now have high refresh rate displays. It's adding magnetic switched hardware shoulder triggers. Well, that costs money. If you're really into playing games on your phone, especially games that are like first person or third person action or shooter titles, you don't want to play that on a Poco as much as you'd want to play that on a Black Shark. And then ditto the ridiculous charging. So in my review, I actually have some concerns about 120 watt charging brick. But it really does charge the fastest I've ever reviewed any phone before. A DTNL. I get triggered without them air triggers, yo. See, that's how he games. He needs them air triggers, yo. So, Black Shark kind of took most of my focus. I've got to send it back soon, so I really had to kind of focus in on that. Let me get this out of the way here. Obviously, TK and I did another stream where we started talking about gaming phones at the top. We also kind of went through some of his experiences on fitness trackers, and then we ended with, I went back and listened to it, and I was definitely exhausted and cranky rambly, but a conversation about headphone reviewing. You know, El Jefe, Jeff, was in the chat for a bit too, and you're like, there are so many things about reviewing gadgets that you've got to move beyond just the reading the specs and then, but what do you think? Do you think it's good? Drop a comment down below. Style of YouTube. It's so lazy and hack. It's a dumb way to kind of ask for participation from a potential audience. But headphone reviewing is super personal. You know, headphones are sort of the longest lasting wearable technology, and they're super personal. What fits you well probably won't fit someone else well. And that has a marked effect on the characteristics of sound. You know, if it doesn't seal around your ear in the same way, then frequencies of sound are not going to be properly represented. And Issa was in the chat for a bit and just talking about how much, you know, how much ire she'd gotten from other techies in her comments. And you're like, a girl talking about earbuds, she's going to have very different experiences than a dude. You know, this is like 50% of the potential consumer market out there doesn't have as good a set of options for things like in-ear earbuds because of biological differences, like literally having smaller ear canals. And without that kind of empathy, we can't bring people into experiencing higher quality or more premium audio. We're just the snarky nerds snickering at the back of the room. Everyone's dumb but me, and I'm going to tell people that they're wrong, and that's lame. So, oh, we got Barry in the chat. We got Bawang Bai. We got Tech Valor. We got Rinesh. This is a good crew. I like where we're at right now. So, Black Shark 4, major part of the conversation. TK and I, our Thursday streams for the best of our week. And then I've been putting these out. They're only on the Patreon. They start out as Patreon previews. They start out exclusive, and then they kind of open up. I did a video for the OnePlus 8. I did a video for the Surface Duo, just talking about kind of some of the updates, some of my experiences. These are less produced, more relaxed fit, more conversational. And I was only going to do kind of a short follow-up on the LG Velvet. My South Korean model LG Velvet got the Android 11 update and then a follow-up update, like a little 200 meg kind of bug fix and security patch update. So that's available on the Patreon. What started out as just a quick, like, yeah, you know, I'm going to kind of talk about Android 11 turned into a 40 minute recording that I trimmed down to about a half hour of just like how sad I am to see features disappear on phones. You know, like, I don't think the Velvet ever got a proper fair shot. You know, it was compared against the G series from LG. Well, it's like a G series, but now it's a mid-ranger, and that's dumb. You know, why would you buy this phone if for like $100 or $200 more, you could just get a V60? Or, you know, like, obviously the better phone this year is going to be a Galaxy of some kind. And it was so frustrating kind of looking back on where we were in 2020 and reviewing phones like the Velvet, that Velvet was never properly positioned against the right competition. It was a handful of reviewers who were pointing out, like, hey, on most carriers, this is being sold at the same price as a Galaxy A71. And it's got a more premium construction. It's got wireless charging. It's got all the same features like a headphone jack. It's got a better headphone jack than the Galaxy. It's got memory card expansion. But it also has proper support for an active pen stylus. So what Galaxy Note series phone with 5G support is going to come in that upper mid-ranger price? Because that's what you've got on a Velvet. It's got support for dual display. You can do all these different things with it. You can like game and watch video at the same time. It works really well. In fact, it plays Dead Cells better than my OnePlus 9 Pro can out of the box. You know, like it's so frustrating. Like Velvet was never given that kind of consideration. So that was just a sneak preview of the video. I spent about a half hour kind of talking about what our perception of these gadgets are, the comparative sort of review process where you couldn't just review Velvet, you had to make the Velvet a loser in a comparison that no one was asking for. And at the same time, I would go through and read reviews on like the Galaxy A71. What an amazing bargain. You know, if you want that Galaxy experience, but you don't want to spend $1,000, this A71 is such a great phone. You know, it's just steamrolling the competition. There's nothing in its class that really competes against it. And then Velvet was like, well, we couldn't get a G9 because LG's cheap. It's not good enough. It's too thick when you use it in a dual display case. It doesn't matter that you can take it out of the dual display case and the dual display case is thinner than a Galaxy Fold. It's too thick and no one's going to use that. Just like, what are we doing? It's so. Oh, and TK. TK's in the chat. Aditya's telling me to stretch. I was going down that path. That is the boiled down version of the half hour video that you can chat at that point. From Pat Ostin, when was the point of Snapdragon 765s becoming acceptable? Cough, cough, certain pixel, was it? Cough, cough. I don't know. You know, the thing that's frustrating is I don't think 765s have ever really properly been made accessible. It's always about moving the goalposts. So if there's a phone that you can buy that's close to the same price but has a more powerful chipset, then you just say, well, you should spend more and get the more powerful phone. The 765 seems to win when you're trying to front load a conversation about what average consumers really need. And then it's a point where you can kind of overlook the performance of a 765. It's good enough. I don't know that it's the 765 has ever been appreciated for what it is. I think it's more, will this help the phone I want to win in this kind of thumbs up, thumbs down review style, or is this something that I just need to overlook? And it's a bummer. You know, it's really silly. McCorkran 3. he says, yeah, A series doesn't have DeX either. He misspelled DeX at first. Yeah, that's another thing too. Like, let's say you wanted a phone A71 price. It's got a full desktop mode. I was writing scripts with it over the weekend again, just because I had broken it back out and I'd shot this video and I'm like, oh yeah, let me plug it into my next dock. I was using it with my UPerfect. But still, it's like, this works so well. I'm using Microsoft Word and streaming video and I'm getting, you know, like I get a call from my wife, you know, like it's plugged into a proper laptop style experience. And it was a phone that full MSRP was the same price as an A71. And of course, we know that especially through carriers, you could have gotten BOGOs, you could have gotten sign-up deals, add-a-line deals. Like there was no way you were stuck paying full price to pick up a Velvet. So it's a bummer. Darn that autocorrect. Apparently, McCorkran 3 is autocorrecting DeX a lot. So, Snorkel Bill saying 765 working just fine for them. I also have the Pixel 4a 5G. I feel like there are so many arguments. So, like, Pixel 4a 5G to Velvet, that's a great conversation. Obviously, Google software support, gonna be better. But if you're talking software versus hardware, the Velvet is, I still feel like the Velvet is gonna be the last best feature complete mid-ranger ever sold. Stylus support, memory card, good headphone jack, wireless charging, dual display support, and a desktop mode. I don't think we're ever going to get that ever again. I think that's dead. And especially now, like, playing with, like, a Black Shark, you know, $499 gaming phone, Snapdragon 870, no video output. So I can't plug that into a TV if I want to sort of move my games to a larger living room experience. Like, that's not a thing it can do. And here's the Velvet. If I want to play Dead Cells on a Bluetooth controller on a nice big screen TV, I can do that really well. Super easy. It just works. And it's what's frustrating is because the Velvet doesn't win. Right? We would all acknowledge that. The Velvet is not a winner where it becomes a foregone conclusion. But neither is a Galaxy A71. And neither is a Pixel 4a 5G. We've got a price envelope where someone can make a choice between software support and hardware features and how this all comes together, and that's how they can spend their money. There are appropriate pros and cons to these different devices, but I'm repeating myself here. No, it doesn't count as housekeeping. I'm off the track. this is just a tangent on top of a tangent. So, yes. We've got a lot of news block to cover. We should probably jump into that. Obviously, everything that we're going to be talking about, all of the links, all of the clips, Scott Peachy's video for Phone Challenge 2, everything's going to be available on the show notes for this week's episode on somegadgetguy.com. All right. Technically, I did beat 25 minutes. Oh, man. And my voice is real fuzzy. Antihistamines dry me out, man. Barry, we're here for any and all tangents. One, I appreciate it because you're going to get a lot of them. Oh, and Andy, we can't win a fixed game. Hey, Kafka, haven't we heard that one before? Yeesh. It's frustrating when the game is so obviously rigged. That's what's kind of a bummer. And I get, like, you're going to have fans of particular brands. I was a fan of LG before I was a fan of Samsung and before I was a fan of Apple. But I just have never grokked. I've never been able to put myself in the shoes of someone who will excuse every single con, bad business practice, or lack of competition to support one label over another. And that's where I can't follow. It's you know, from me holding up a Note 4 and talking about how it's still one of the best phones of all time ever made, doesn't mean that buying a Samsung today is a foregone conclusion because it's not the same company. So that to me is where I get that comment on a YouTube video. Well, I don't care about headphone jack, higher resolution displays, better power management, better performance, or any of these other features or settings, but the Galaxy is obviously the right choice. Like, you're such a waste. You're such a waste of these precious natural resources and materials. You could be on a Galaxy A50, not an A51, you know, like a three-year-old mid-ranger and have exactly the same experience. All right. Oh, and King Tut sells cars. I'm glad you've been enjoying the videos and where we've been going. I definitely am working against being so cranky all the time. It is my natural state, so it takes effort to kind of move me out of being so maudlin. The Velvet video kicked my butt because I was like, oh, yeah, we want to talk about Android 11. Woo, it's on the Velvet. Oh, I'm sad. Okay, let's jump into some news. We have a bit of politics to cover. These are long-running stories. The first one we're going to kick off has to do with right to repair. Huge, huge respect for folks like Luis Rossman, Rossman Group. My go-to for covering repair, teardowns. I mean, I get why some YouTube channels are fun in kind of a gadget destruction porn kind of way. But for me, I really like the folks over at iFixit. I feel like they've been advocates from the beginning about having more consumer control, being able to repair your products instead of throwing them away. To me, they deserve the lion's share of the credit for driving this conversation. I'm so happy that larger and higher profile content creators and influencers are popping up to shed some light on this topic. When they do, I feel like we need to highlight the work from people who have been doing it and make sure that they continue to grow and build an audience as well. So like every single time I see a phone teardown, if I don't click over to iFixit, then I feel like you're taking traffic away from them. Like, why would I write up a Cliff Notes version of an iFixit article when I can just send you directly to iFixit, right? That's kind of my feeling on the subject. From a political process, this is a conversation that unfortunately requires time and data. So as the market quickly changes up and we see business policy that stands against right to repair initiatives, we see the influence that mega corporations can have on state legislatures. We need to have global and federal conversations about fixing things rather than a sort of a buy and upgrade cycle that consumers don't even benefit from. Oh, this iPhone is so much more powerful. Wasn't there the story? I don't have it in the news block. Wasn't there a story like iPhone 10Rs were outperforming iPhone 12s on benchmarks? And you're like, there are so many of us that have been trying to talk about real world performance. You buy this new phone and Apple puts up this unlabeled bar graph about how much better it's going to be. But then you use a phone and it's exactly the same. And that's the reality of using this. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. Where we're at right now, we are starting to get some of this analysis back from regulatory agencies. So hopefully this is the data that we can use to properly guide legislators. The people writing our laws, they need pressure. They are going to have an onslaught of campaign donations and money as speech from mega corporations that have a vested interest in preventing consumers from being able to work on or repair their products. That's the main body of language and speech that's going to be coming at state and federal lawmakers. If they don't hear from us, backed up by the FTC, then there's a one-sided conversation happening. Every time we run off to social media to complain about something right to repair, politicians and lawmakers aren't following that thread. If we were to take that same language, that same tweet, that same Facebook post, that same Reddit share, and send it directly to the offices of a state or federal congressman or senator, that would be an amplification of a voice and the counterbalance to all of the lobbying efforts against right to repair. And this is better data. So going into screen share, FTC finds scant reason for repair limits in right to repair report. This is coming by way of protocol.com, written up by Ben Brody. The Federal Trade Commission told Congress there is scant evidence to support manufacturers' justifications for repair restrictions in a Thursday report that promised to consider new rules or enforcement around consumers' right to repair their goods. Following a 2019 workshop, the agency concluded that access to information, manuals, spare parts, and tools were among the proposals that were well-supported to boost consumers' right to repair. And then it goes on to talk about how other consumer groups have argued manufacturers' limits on users' ability to repair items drives up costs and forces consumers to buy new goods before the useful lives of the items they already have are up. We have a general idea. Like, we have a general feeling about this, right? Like, look at all the people in your family and friends. My wife was one of these people. I don't like to update my phone software because phone updates slow my phone down. We've got to overcome, like, the feeling is correct. Yeah? As your phone ages over time, it slows down. Apple contributed to that by throttling performance based on battery health for iPhones that had the bare minimum battery capacity to get you through a day of use when those phones are brand new. But if you were a heavy user of your phone, that battery would degrade quickly, and then they would throttle the performance with no accountability and no discussion. For the consumers using that phone. So you get that feeling. I updated to the newest version of iOS, and now my phone is slower and stuttery, and it doesn't just work like it used to just work. It just worked. I don't have enough just work it juice. It needs more just work. So I should buy a new iPhone. And Apple's been, like, penalized to the tune of a couple million dollars. It's probably like hundreds of millions of dollars on a business practice that probably profited them to the tune of billions of dollars. A mega corporation can roll into a state legislature and influence with thousands of dollars of campaign contributions and benefit to the tune of hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in profit. You can lobby federal lawmakers for a couple million dollars overall as an industry and profit to the tune of billions. It is so cheap. It is so cost effective to speak directly with money as speech and get in the way of this process to have your interests elevated above all of the constituents of that politician. So it's heartening that an organization like the FTC hasn't been as politically manipulated by that relationship. It seems FTC and now the FCC under Rosenworcel, a little harder to lobby them. It's a little more difficult to influence a tiny little underfunded commission in our federal government, as opposed to the individual, like, senators and congresspeople. Arthur Lee, just work it juice is now extremely a thing. I need to make that, like, I'm going to have my own line of energy drinks, and it's the just work juice. Have you had your JWJ today? Double J dubs, that's what I'm talking about, yo. I'll have Aditya do the voiceover for me. Yeah, son, that's what I'm saying. Simon says, Hypno, it used to irk me that Apple would literally change the screws to try and thwart third-party repair on their laptops. How quaint, right? Think back. We were so angry about the different lobed screws that they would use. Now I would kill for that era of Apple where you could really get into and replace components and not have them serialized, where they would brick your gadgets if you didn't take it to a proper Apple repair shop to verify the Apple certified component that you were trying to put into your phone. So this is good data. Check out what's going on at the FTC. Use this. I mean, I've got a link to protocol here, but we can use this FTC data, link it and share it. Link it and share it. And drop an email directly to your local elected officials. I support Right to Repair. I'm seeking your support for this initiative, for future generations, for the health of our planet, to conserve resources, valuable resources, and to make more money in the long run. I want consumers to be able to fix their gadgets. And the FTC supports this with this data. Love, Juan Bagnell. Put in your own name, but don't put in mine. And don't copy that word for word. Like, change a few things so it doesn't look like you were copying directly off of my paper there. From Pacostin, update slow down my Android phone. Laughs in Pine phone. That is slow by default, but getting progressively more user friendly. And that's another thing too. I mean, again, I really liked, you know, phones like the Stylo. I didn't see a problem recommending it on a sale because it's like, yeah, this phone is pokey and slow. This is not going to win any awards. It's kind of painful to multitask with, but I put on a video and I plug in some headphones and like, oh yeah, I'm just running with this. Like, this is a great phone. You know, like when I'm sitting and I'm using it and it's just in the app that I want to use, like, this is great. If I got the phone for under $150 after tax and shipping, so I don't feel that bad about it. Like if you know, like if you can communicate that. I love that Pine phone. It's already slow. Suckers. Riding the politics trend, we've got two stories that are kind of back to back here from Ars Technica. Both written up by John Brodkin. Again, another writer that I hope you're following if you're interested in the conversation surrounding money, tech, politics, and infrastructure. He does great work. I really like following his write-ups on this industry. So, I feel like all of us are going to be shocked to our core. During the last presidential administration, we had a head of the FCC who was heck-bent on dismantling net neutrality for the benefit of consumers. What was really standing in the way of consumers was all of this heavy-handed, restrictive, authoritarian regulating of the internet. And once we got rid of net neutrality, we were going to be free. The shackles were going to be off. Broadband expansion was going to explode. Businesses were going to see like the benefit of not having to deal with these oppressive regulations and broadband. You were going to see that free market. Free market was going to bring down the price of broadband. And I don't know how we could have gone wrong. I don't understand how that magical deregulation platform from the FCC ever could have failed in its mission to expand broadband and bring prices down for consumers. I'm just shocked that Ajit Pai promised cheaper internet, but real prices rose 19% instead. Again, Ars Technica, John Brodkin. The average U.S. home internet bill increased 19% during the first 3 years of the Trump administration, disproving former Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai's claim that deregulation lowered prices, according to a new report by advocacy group Free Press. For tens of millions of families that are not wealthy, quote, these increases are felt deeply, forcing difficult decisions about which services to forego so they can maintain critical internet access services. The 19% Trump-era increase is adjusted for inflation to match the value of 2020 dollars, with the monthly cost rising from $39.35 in 2016 to $47.01 in 2019. Without the inflation adjustment, the average household internet price rose from $36.48 to $46.38, an increase of 27%. So, not only are we getting less value for our money, but yeah, I haven't seen any substantial, that's a better word. I haven't seen any substantial improvement in service. I get pretty good cable service where I live. My upload speeds are terrible, so it's kind of a coin flip whether or not I can actually host this stream. But, you know, I've been paying more. My prices have gone up. It's the same service. The infrastructure's there. They're just babysitting and managing what's already been established. And they probably got zoning deals, tax breaks, and sweetheart pricing considerations to be a monopoly in my area. And I have no competition, so I can't take my money anywhere else. Uh, th- this Who could have foreseen this except for all of the people that were yelling and shouting and screaming that deregulating this market in its current state is a bad idea? You know, I am for net neutrality for somewhat conservative reasons. I feel we need to reset, reestablish some kind of a more level playing field. It's never going to be perfectly level. And then I want to see if a company is a private entity and they keep their profits private, they should be able to compete with their own funds. They shouldn't be benefiting from public funds and public tax dollars to improve their profit margin. I feel like that's fair. You know, as soon as public funds go into a private corporation, then there needs to be accountability and oversight. And we get to have a say. It's our tax dollars. We get to have a say on what goes on with your business. This policy was yet another way to funnel more public funds, more tax dollars, and raise prices on consumers. So ISPs have been able to triple dip. You know, they make money on sending content, they make money on receiving content, and then they get money from the government. So I don't feel they're public. I don't feel they're private companies. You know, I feel like at this point we should just kind of nudge them out of the way and go to municipal broadband, unless they're really willing to compete. And by compete, they've got to put their money into their own infrastructure to make their product, to make their service better than a competitor. Which means we need to have competition, and it means I need to have more than one choice in plugging in a truly broadband cable into my home to get all of the internet accesses. Dave Burns, but that's communism, because communism is anything that I don't understand and sounds like I don't like, but would actually benefit me in the long run. Simon says, hypno. What we're talking about is corporate socialism. No handouts to the poor. You folks need to beg for your stimulus check. So the follow-up to this, already Ajit Pai let us down. How could he have let us down? He was so hip to the tasty internet memes. He had the wacky oversized coffee mug. He was such a meme-y kind of guy. We didn't get it. Well, maybe it was because, you know, I'm sure through no design or any kind of relationship with his former industry, where he was a telecom lawyer, I believe he worked for Verizon. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong there. I'm sure it couldn't, he probably had no idea that this was happening right under his nose, that And likely even one of his former employers, as a group of this collection of service providers, that the biggest ISPs paid for 8.5 million fake FCC comments opposing net neutrality. The ISP-funded astroturfing used millions of real names and faked consent records. This is, again, John Brodkin, Ars Technica. Nearly 18 million out of 22 million comments were fabricated, including both pro and anti-net neutrality submissions. One 19-year-old submitted 7.7 million pro-net neutrality comments under fake, randomly generated names. But the astroturfing effort, funded by the broadband industry, stood out because it used real people's names without their consent, with third-party firms hired by the industry faking consent records. The New York Attorney General's office began its investigation in 2017 and said it faced stonewalling from then-FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, who refused requests for evidence. But after a years-long process of obtaining and analyzing tens of thousands of internal emails, planning documents, bank records, invoices, and data comprising hundreds of millions of records, the New York Attorney General said it, quote, found that millions of fake comments were submitted through a secret campaign funded by the country's largest broadband companies to manufacture support for the repeal of existing net neutrality rules. Again, we knew. There was an anti-net neutrality comment posted by Barack Hussein Obama with all of the data of the former president linked to that submission. And we yelled about it, and we complained. When we talk about, oh, well, both sides do this or both sides are terrible, you know, it was a decades-long fight to get net neutrality installed under Tom Wheeler, President Obama's head of the FCC. And I thought Wheeler was going to be a telecom shill because he used to work as a lawyer, as a lobbyist for the telecom industry. But in fact, he actually took his role seriously at the FCC. And we got basic, almost toothless protections. Again, it was a reactionary policy that properly categorized the internet as a telecommunication service, as opposed to an information service. And it was mostly reactionary. Like if an ISP grossly overstepped some type of net neutrality and it could be proven, the FCC would have some authority to go after them. There was nothing about repealing net neutrality that was ever going to be a consumer benefit. If you are pro-business and you're conservative, repealing the largely weak and toothless federal standard is bad for business. So getting rid of net neutrality, I would have to ask you, why do you hate businesses? Why are you as a conservative against a policy that is, in the long term, better for businesses than what we're going to currently end up with New York and California and every state in between having their own different take on how the internet should be regulated? It doesn't work. I understand this kind of libertarian idea where the free market should be able to course correct and adjust for itself. But in an era of deregulation, where the commission responsible for trying to protect consumer interests is occupied by an obvious telecom shill who will get to rewrite all the rules in favor of a handful of monopolistic players, you can't have your libertarian fantasy of a free and open market that will actually compete. We need to course correct, and then hopefully we can look at weakening some of these regulations. But we can't do that until we have some kind of competitive market again. Hate to say it, but you're sort of on our side. Again, we knew this was all fake. We knew that this was astroturfed. We needed the data so that you could actually build some kind of legal argument, and they blocked us. They blocked us until the damage had been done, and we were years away from being able to kind of course correct or repair that damage. And now it's going to be so much more difficult to get that back through, especially with our current elected officials, like the current politicians that are going to be debating this in state and federal arenas. It's all going to be hyper partisan, super divisive. They're trying to destroy your freedom. They're trying to oppress you. What about free speech? And it's all going to be the poopiest circus of cable news grandstanding instead of getting to a practical benefit that will improve service for consumers and actually reduce costs for carriers and ISPs. At some point, you can have a federal standard that overrides what the states are doing. That's a conversation we need to have between federal authority and states' rights. And then you end up at a policy that kind of makes sense for everybody, even if it's a little weak-willed. Better for businesses, better for consumers. And we knew, that this was how it was going to go down. Dave Burns. Ah, yes, enlightened centrism. Why do anything when I have no skin in the game and having a stake makes me look dumb? And Clifton M. Thomas, all influenced by the speech that checks written by corporations count. it's frustrating because it works. You know, we fought long and hard to get this, you know, reasonable policy in place with good ideas. The original open internet order was laughably weak, and Verizon still felt like they had to sue it into oblivion. I want to wrap this up, wrapping up the news block here, just kind of talking about Apple. Again, this is another legal quandary that we find ourselves in. You know, there's the Apple versus Epic lawsuit. In the EU, we're seeing a different take on Apple's App Store in an anti-competitive or monopolistic sense. As there was recently, we talked about it, the court case between Apple and Spotify. And recently, I'd like to add AirTags to this conversation as well. Apple looks at a competing service, sees that there's something in there that could benefit their current business model. They leverage their entire infrastructure, and I mean that not in terms of just manufacturing, but also their consumer base, to push out a competing product. You look at AirTags versus Tile. Tile has existed for a while. You know, this is a good idea. A little Bluetooth tag, it alerts you to when something's lost. And when you install the Tile app, you can choose to join a network of other Tile users in case one of your products goes missing. It can ping Tile servers if another Tile user happens to be near it. You can get kind of like a ping on that last known location. But it's restricted to Tile's app and to Tile service. So what does Apple do? They see that's a good idea. Location-based tracking, it's a consumer benefit. It is a consumer benefit. It is. It's a benefit to have some kind of trackable, you know where your products were. And what Apple can do is Apple can just make it a part of the Find My iPhone, Find My Phone network. Well, instead of having just this one little community of people who agreed to be trackers for Tile, we'll just turn it on for all iPhone users. We'll opt everyone in. That makes for a better surface. Isn't that better? Except for the fact that Apple's also been posturing about all this like data privacy and data security and people confusing security for privacy. And just like, you're so cranky about Facebook and you're making your platform better for consumers there, where people can choose to be tracked by Facebook ad servers. But when it comes to Find My Phone style location tracking, you're just turning it on for everybody, whether or not they own AirTags. I feel that's a little hypocritical. I feel that's a bit disingenuous when you really say you care about security and privacy and all that. You're making your product better at the expense of a competitor, shutting that competitor out of a benefit that you have access to in the humongous community of iOS users, and you get to claim, oh no, it's still competition. You don't have to use AirTags, but we signed you in. I feel like that's problematic. So in this Apple versus Epic lawsuit on app stores and the 30% commission that Apple makes on every purchase that goes through iOS devices. Yeah, the emails and the data that we're getting out still doesn't make Apple look great. I'm not siding with Epic. Like, I don't have a horse in this race in that I like Epic better than Apple, but I feel Epic is making a stronger overall argument about the restrictive processes of the Apple App Store, the inconsistency that Apple treats individual developers. Because if Apple needs a developer, they get special rules. If Apple doesn't feel they need you on the App Store, you are facing the most punitive version of Apple. And that's kind of the data that we're getting out of some of these disclosures, some of these email threads. So this one was written up by Mike Peterson over at Apple Insider. Apple has a whitelist of developers who can access unique App Store features. And we saw this breakdown. A couple of outlets wrote this up where Phil Schiller was looking into some of the business practices from companies like Hulu. And so when Hulu first started using the Apple App Store, there was a special API where Hulu was big enough that they could create a special refund and rebuy. There was a special refund and cancellation API. So Hulu was allowed to offer, you know, if you're using Hulu through an iPhone and you signed up through an iPhone, what you can do, you can cancel this and then you can automatically go through the web, go through a browser, desktop, laptop, whatever, and pay for Hulu directly that way. Those tools have been accessible to some apps, but not all apps. And again, Tim Cook covered his rear well enough. I don't know if you all remember a while back when we had that Senate antitrust hearing with Facebook and Apple and Amazon and Google all testifying to various business practices. Tim Cook was just tripping over, we don't bully on our platform. We don't go after developers except WordPress and Spotify. We don't steal. That's not in the Apple DNA. We're not that kind of company. All developers are treated equal. And then immediately the follow-up question was, but don't some apps have like special considerations? And he was like, well, yes, there are, you know, if a certain app reaches this kind of threshold, we have different rules for them, but all developers are treated the same. And you're like, well, that's kind of a lie. And he was under oath. And then we get this data out where Apple was like jumping through hoops to redefine the rules on how they were doing business with services like Hulu. And then they eventually get away from using that API where someone could refund or cancel a subscription through. So they made it more difficult for consumers to do business directly with Hulu. They acted as a walled off gatekeeper, preventing that kind of interaction.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hello, my name is Martin, and I run the Tech Altar YouTube channel. I talk about tech, obviously, but instead of focusing purely on the devices themselves, I mostly analyze the companies, their business and marketing strategies, as well as the industry trends that shape the gadgets we all love. I studied business, I work for a couple of tech companies like Oppo in China, for example, and I'm building my own tech startup on the side right now, so I really like talking about these topics. And if you enjoy zooming out and trying to see the bigger picture as well, you can find me by searching for Tech Altar, that's A-L-T-A-R, on YouTube, and you can also come say hi to me on Twitter as well. Thanks, Juan.
And it really kind of hones in when, this is another follow-up article from Engadget. Who did this? Steve Dent over at Engadget also followed this up. Netflix was kind of thrown into the same situation. Netflix dropped in-app purchases through the iOS store, and the emails at Apple were talking about ways that they could punitively affect Netflix. I gotta find this part of the article. According to several threads, Netflix planned to run a study detailing the impact of disabling in-app purchases on iOS. It said it was concerned that users who signed up for Netflix on iOS had a tendency to cancel more often than when they joined on Netflix's website or other ways. As such, Netflix wanted to run a 2-month test in select markets with in-app purchases. Spotted by 9to5 Mac, the documents show that Apple offered to advertise Netflix in its retail stores, pay for search ads, and even bundle Netflix with its own services. Netflix ultimately dropped in-app subscriptions for new iOS signups and didn't seem to suffer any losses as a result. So what value is Apple bringing to the table here? If you're a service and you've got like a streaming solution, you're building your own kind of network of consumers, you have a direct relationship with them, you obviously need to take iOS and iPadOS users into consideration. And now eventually macOS, as macOS becomes more like iPadOS. Once you've built some momentum on your own, Apple brings nothing to the table except standing in your way. Like, they literally just occupy space between you and a potential customer. There's no, Netflix suffered no losses, seemed to suffer any losses as a result. So we've got a question, you know, like, why would Netflix give 30% when they're managing their servers, they're streaming the content, they're working out all of the interconnect deals with ISPs, and the best Apple could kind of come up with was, well, we could kind of advertise you in our store. I mean, that technically breaks the rules because we'd be advertising for Netflix We're not advertising for every video streaming platform, but all developers are treated the same, except some developers are special. It's just like, it's such a... It's frustrating again, because it's like the marketing works. It just works, right? Apple gets these kind of brownie points for being, you know, like, we're protecting your privacy, we're protecting your data, you know, it's safer to install apps only through a singular point, even though malware can still hit the Apple App Store. No, there needs to be some kind of market correction here. What Apple brings to the table is less and less a consumer benefit and more a lock-in practice. And we also see that when Apple gets enough data, well, Netflix didn't want to do our 30% cut, and we can't change our app payment structure, make it more fair across the board for other developers. So we're going to make Apple TV Plus. We're going to replicate Netflix's business model and make it more accessible and advertise it and promote it. And it's going to have like featured apps and the best Apple apps that you can use and first party services. And just like they did with Spotify, they made Apple Music. Well, you know, I mean, like, we can't keep Spotify under our thumb and keep them generating revenue for us. We'll make our own. We'll make our own Spotify with Blackjack and people who are friendly for money. So yeah, no good. Sorry, I'm seeing a DTNL shocked Pikachu face. What? Gary the Fireman, iPhones don't get viruses, malware, or bugs, except for the malware that has actually made it onto the Apple App Store. And all of the we talked about this briefly a couple weeks back too, the sort of army of fake services that rip off real developers and then charge ridiculous subscription prices. You know, like, you want a keyboard for your Apple Watch? $100 a year. It's ridiculous. So that's going to do it for the news block here. Lots of cranky, right? You know, I'm feeling like we had the politics news, court cases to keep up with. You know, when we're looking at Microsoft, Microsoft recently changed their split for their game publishing division. What did they drop it to? Wasn't it like 15% or 10% or 12%? Somewhere in there. And again, you can see like that's a targeted business move to flesh out their Xbox and Game Pass catalog. But at the same time, it's an end run around some of the longer term looks at business practices. With Apple under the spotlight for the App Store and the commission that Apple charges, it behooves Microsoft to make a more magnanimous gesture, like cutting the commission rate for developers, and it makes them look more competitive. They've recently bought up a number of studios, so if they've got more third-party studios on their software platform, it also helps them in any kind of antitrust regulating in the EU, especially where I feel Microsoft still would probably get more scrutiny than Apple would for a lot of these business practices. For some reason, we have the genetic memory of Microsoft put a web browser on Windows. That's anti-competitive. But here, Apple is knocking off like Tile, Spotify, Netflix, charging other developers 30% commissions on things that they don't have to manage. Like, Apple's overdue a little scrutiny there. Paul Purry, Blackjack and Courtesans. So we absolutely need to keep an eye on this. I really don't know how it's going to play out in the United States. I feel the penalties and the repercussions will probably be stricter in the EU. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see if there's a market correction. And I feel like once there is, it's going to be better for consumers, better for developers. I don't think Apple's ever going to open up the iPhone. You know, like, there's not going to be side-loading apps on iPhones. Like, that's not going to be a thing. But if they're forced to do business in a more reasonable way, that's going to be better for consumers, developers. It's going to be better for everyone. Nick Fell, oh man, I completely forgot about the Windows Internet Explorer precedent. Again, we got real upset the browser wars were real. You know, like that was intense. It was way more intense than the Pepsi challenge, right? You know, like people were lit up. But we've lobster potted since then. Like we've kind of slowly turned the temperature up on services. And now we're kind of, I mean, it works. It works really well. I don't care if I don't have a choice or competition. Why would I care? It works. It works fine. It does what I need it to do. And you're like, that's not how this works. Or at least it shouldn't be. Yeah, poor Netscape. That was a dirty move. Paul Burry, newsflash, IE lost. Sadly, Internet Explorer still has way more like browser share than it should, even with Microsoft aggressively trying to kill it for Edge. Why don't we knock out the subreddit here, and then we got a special treat and got a video with me and Scott Peachy we're going to do right after the subreddit plug. But every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception, but my subreddit is built to try. It's built to hopefully enable another place where we can share, promote, and bring a little light to the content that we feel deserves more attention. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you'll find this awesome little subreddit here where you're going to find a much broader collection of content creators and discussions than what YouTube is going to serve to you. And I won again. Ooh, ooh. Black Shark 4 review landed top spot. Glowing Rectangles this week. I'm on a good streak, y'all. I did not expect Black Shark to take the lead. I was thinking top 3. I got my Black Shark 4 review out. Feel like this is a good video. The video is doing garbage traffic on YouTube. Like, I think it's got like 2,000 views. Like, This is, it's been miserable making YouTube videos lately, and especially like knowing, I know there are people subscribed to me who would want to just hang out and talk about phones that aren't necessarily as search popular, but YouTube is not putting my video anywhere near their ability to find it. So kind of sucks, but at least when I put it to an open community that's not manipulated by YouTube's algorithm, it seems to perform better relative. I feel like I'm getting my, I feel valid. I feel seen and I feel validated. Top spot, killing it. I love it. So this is a good streak for me. I don't know what I'm going to back it up with this week. I don't think this week is going to bring the same kind of noise. But number one, Black Shark 4. Number two, Jay Williams checking out the LG V60. And immediately, 24 hours later, with the best LG phone. He took the top, the second and third place spots looking at LG V60. Really strong performance for a phone that's just an absolute tank of a productivity handset. I took number four on reviews.org, looking at the definition of broadband. And then we get 8 months using the Xperia 1 Mark II. We get TK Bay, his Saturday morning with a side of tech. We've got Galaxy S21 Ultra and Asus Zenfone 8 specs. We got that video copied. So Saeed also shared the same Xperia 1 video and it scored relatively well. And then Easy Computer Solutions looking at the Nokia Lumia 1520 in the year 2021. And I don't know, was the 1520 the best Windows phone ever? Anyone? Bueller? I'd be curious to see what your thoughts were. Yeah, we've got the Friday checkout looking at Chinese cars from TechAlter. We've got Grant Likes Tech, looking back at the Xperia XZ1 Compact, still one of my all-time favorite Mighty Mouse phones. And this is a great video from Shannon Morse from Snubs. We've got how to get rid of ads on Samsung Galaxy phones and disable them from the start. Because I think it's pants on heads dumb that Samsung is taking premium, super expensive consumer electronics. And if you don't do exactly the right steps and setup, they serve ads on your super premium devices. And when you try to disable those ads, like if you made a mistake while you were setting up the phone, it is difficult to untangle and turn them off. Again, Shannon's video points out very efficiently how to do that. Samsung didn't make it easy and efficient to do that. You just got to spell it out for someone. And Shannon has done a very good job of doing that. So I think that's a terrible business practice. And for that alone, I'm often reluctant to recommend Samsung products like televisions, where I do everything I possibly can to avoid the Samsung TV UI and I use a Chromecast. And I'll never buy another Samsung TV because why? Why would I spend that much money and not really use what Samsung has to offer me? But I digress. So, participation. We had a strong showing on the podcast this week. We're up another 4 or 5 subscribers. What are we at right now? 1,771 viewers, subscribers, contributors, and some brilliant conversations. You know, we got Tech Odyssey, we got El Jefe, we've got Luis Rossman. Tech Potato did a great video on IBM's 2-nanometer fabrication process. Excuse me. Again, I love Ian's videos. And what's your minimum specification? If you really want to like dig into architecture, processor design, and the real world costs of bringing those products to market, I absolutely love this video series from Dr. Ian. Tech Potato is great. And I just like his vibe because, you know, like, you can also see those moments where he's like, okay, this is confusing and I don't really get why the company's doing this. And it's so organic. But then you'll flip it around for this other video where he's talking about IBM and you can see he's like a little lit up about it. You know, like, it's just fun when you see kind of that honest nerd pop out. And it's not just, well, I'm doing this for clicks. It's, no, this is cool. Pay attention. Check this out. So, folks, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Super cool. I'm week after week, I'm finding new stuff. There's cool stuff being shared. We're seeing some channels grow. We're seeing people participate. We always need more, you know, more sharing, more contributing, comments. Don't be shy with the upvotes. Drop in once a week and just click a couple up arrows. And that helps someone potentially find an audience that they might not have been able to find before. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. It's good times. I hope to see you there. It's good. All right. From Clifton M. Thomas, where you served ads on the Black Shark. I know Xiaomi is really bad about it. Okay. For my Mi 11 Lite, I followed the setup and I signed into everything to really kind of get a feel for what the Xiaomi experience was. So I was definitely getting served ads on the Mi 11. For the Black Shark, because I had limited time with it, and I've got to wipe it out and send it back probably in another day or two. I abbreviated a lot of my kind of longer term. Let's look at this. Let's wait for some updates. Let's take our time with it. And so a part of that was also just like I signed into nothing. There was no Xiaomi experience. No, nothing. I put in one Gmail account, downloaded all of the apps that I needed, and then just focused on playing games and testing performance. I feel that's more in keeping with the Black Shark conversation anyway. The thing that's concerning about Xiaomi are the number of services where you still see or feel the hand of Xiaomi influencing what's going on, and then the services where you feel like they should have nothing to do with your behavior or data. Let me see if I can hold on. I don't know if the Black Shark is on. Oh, it's not. All right. So you'll just have to take my word for it. You go to your Black Shark and you're like, hey, I need to use the calculator. I haven't signed into any of the Xiaomi services. It's a calculator. And I tap on it and it starts asking for permissions. I don't feel any calculator app should have any permissions for user data, phone call state, anything. And that's just kind of the core thing of a Xiaomi is you run into those situations. Like I said, I'm not signed into any of the Xiaomi products or I didn't use any of the free apps that come on a Xiaomi, any of the free games. But then I would go and search. I searched for Audio Evolution. That's the audio editing app that I love on Android. It's gotten some really solid polish updates over the last couple updates.
you were thinking about recording a podcast on your phone, I'd recommend checking out Audio Evolution. I search for it and it doesn't show up in the search results. And that's a little concerning. I'm in Google Play. I'm searching for an app I know exists and it's not showing up in search. So I leave Google Play and I open up Firefox and I search for Audio Evolution and I go right to the Google Play link. I click on the link and then it reopens Google Play directly to Audio Evolution. So I can't 100% claim that I know what's happening there, but there's some data to suggest that Xiaomi is getting involved in the app selection and app installation process, even if I'm not getting like the ads that I got. On the Mi 11 I showed, like you would go to install an app and there'd be like a special app scanning security process that Xiaomi would sort of wedge in between you and Google Play. And while it's doing the app scanning, you're getting served an ad. You're like, okay, I don't need your help to install my most commonly used apps on Google Play. So I eventually turned that off. That's not a benefit for me. But it seems like there's still an aspect of that happening on other phones like the Black Shark. So it's not just there's this big banner advertisement. It's how is this thing handling my personal data? Why is it requesting special permissions for commonly used services like calculators? And is it really influencing or inserting itself in between me and the other services? Like, I'm just kind of surprised. Like, I feel Google, who makes so much of their money on user data, behavior, trends, and advertising, would be concerned about a Xiaomi influencing search results in Google Play. Like, to me, that seems like that would be a massive conflict. You know, that two companies would have lawyers pointing at each other, Spider-Man style. No, you, no, you. You can't track their data. We're tracking their data. Nuh-uh. You know, like, that to me seems like it would be a very sensitive thing to have happen there. So I'm so much less familiar with Xiaomi products. Like, this is another one. I'm at some point going to circle back and try and get my hands on a Mi 11 Ultra because I really want to see what that camera sensor can do. But along the way, I feel like there is a very precious, like a very tangible conversation that needs to be had about software and hardware. You can buy a Xiaomi and get incredible hardware for a very reasonable price, but that has to come with an examination of updates and other business practices. And it's not a don't buy. It's not a I think you should ignore Xiaomi. It's just the realities of using a modern connected device in this day and age and getting the price that you're getting for this hardware needs to come with some kind of counterbalance. And if we're not upfront about that conversation, or we try to ignore parts of that conversation, then we're not really doing our job as techies. Oh, and Dave Burns, I need to be better about this. I wish there were more people moving to the other services. F-Droid is super neat. I definitely need to. I mean, because I was planning some of those other conversations, like I still install Here Maps. I like Here Maps, and especially when I can get back to traveling. The ability to store an entire country of map and point of interest data in Here Maps and not have to rely on data when I'm out and about in a place I'm less familiar with, huge. I use OneDrive as my main cloud storage solution. I use Firefox as my primary browser. Like, all these opportunities for us to kind of compartmentalize and spread out, but then in a way kind of better protect our own sensitive information. Excuse me. Those conversations need to expand, and I really want to do a better job of servicing those conversations. TK Bay, the search issue is typical to Xiaomi devices as they typically are not whitelisted by developers, and you get that with new versions of devices from them. Benchmarks are also sometimes in that boat. Interesting. Very interesting. Then Barry is saying, agreed, it's definitely something that consumers need to watch with Xiaomi. And I believe, Barry, you were on a Mi 11, not the Lite. You had the
the 888 version. Please correct me if I'm wrong there. But yeah, a few more people with a bit more experience on Xiaomi have been kind of pointing me in directions to kind of catch up. So what we're going to do here, we're going to take the next, like, it's about 12, 13 minutes. Hold on. I might actually want to preface this a little bit better. Scott Peachy and I, we had an offline conversation. Scott just put out this video here, Phone Challenge 2. I'm going to find, it's hard when someone's talking. Yeah, that's a better look at Scott. Scott is a much happier and smileier individual than this photo, this screenshot would otherwise indicate. But Scott kind of got excited about my idea of doing a phone challenge. So I put out the challenge to record a podcast. He didn't submit a podcast, but he was inspired to take a look back at the Pixel 4a 5G, and he shot and recorded audio entirely off of the phone. And I just like, it's really exciting watching someone kind of do that for the first time. You know, you can also see some of the areas where he wasn't framing as well as he could have. Like, he's not practiced in doing this. But at the same time, he still ended up with this beautiful looking 4K video shot entirely from a phone. So he is going to be putting out Phone Challenge for May. And the video is out. It was released over the weekend. Phone Challenge 2, make a video intro with your phone. And he's hooking up a giveaway, and he's not putting out a prize. He's just straight cash. So if your video intro, you don't have to do a full video. He wants you to make like a little intro. So I had him on over the weekend. We chatted for a while. I cut that down because it was a lot of me rambling, and you already get a lot of that on the podcast. So I'm going to cut to that, and we're going to spend some time. This is a conversation with Scott Peachy to talk about Phone Challenge May 2021. Record a video intro with your phone. I'm going to cut to that, and I'll see you all live again on the other side of this video here. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Like, I mean, you don't. I have the button. You couldn't do that.
I couldn't do any of it. Like, we could be live. We could be not live. We're all the lives. None the lives.
No way to know. There's no way to know. Scott, thank you for joining me. It's been really exciting over the last couple of years, finding a few more voices in the tech community, in the tech space, that are kind of game to have a little bit more fun with the kinds of conversations that we've been having. Mm-hmm. So I for just extending the appreciation, thank you for jumping on and for having this chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've really been digging your stuff, watching your videos.
I like fangirl over your stuff. So it's one of those things, like, just to be on your podcast, just to be, you know, consider you a friend and things like that, bouncing good ideas off of one another. But it's like, yeah, I'm not the only person thinking we should do these things. I'm not the only one that's kind of not, I guess, put out is a good way to say, like, yeah, okay, Apple, we get it. You do stuff. All right, Samsung. Yep, we got it. You do stuff. Now show me something else. show me other brands, show me what I can do with the art of the possible.
I think one of the things that's been motivating my crankiness in a lot of my videos recently has been looking at my family and friends. They'd get a new phone, they'd get a new laptop, they'd get a new TV, and they'd be so excited. And now it's this like this palpable exhaustion. Oh, I've got to get a new phone.
Yeah,
I'm just setting up my new phone is going to be exhausting. And that kind of hurts my soul.
Funny that you mentioned it, because this is one of those things like my wife, she's by no means like not ignorant when it comes to tech. She's very savvy, but she has an iPhone. She has an iPhone 10, actually. And she is obsessed with this Harry Potter game. She's been playing this game for legit like 3.5 years. It feels like an eternity for the entire time she's had her phone. And she flat out refuses to get another phone because she's afraid that she might lose the progress, even though you can create backups in the cloud and yada, yada, yada. She's like, I don't want to do that. And then the concept of, oh my God, I don't want to go this is set up the way that I want. I would rather use antiquated tech than be excited about other things, because it truly is like, it actually is like an act of just sheer will to get something done for new tech. Whereas I'm like, no. I want to tinker. I want to do those things. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a better way to get excited about that tech again. And you're starting to see some, like, and again, I'm a big Google Pixel guy. You know this, and everybody who watches anything related to mine knows I'm kind of like the Pixel dude.
I mean, in a couple of weeks, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on Pixel 8. So
I know it's going to come out. Pixel 16, what you guys don't know is it folds twice. It's amazing. But for me, it was about, oh God, there's got to be a better way to use. And Google's done a really good job of making it easier.
We've kind of allowed this lowest common denominator definition of a smartphone to root into consumers' minds. And yet we're also at the same time telling them like, well, you need the latest and greatest. How can you do anything on a year old phone? That's garbage now.
Is there really, is such and such phone worth it in 2021? Can such and such a phone work in 2021? Yeah, it can. Totally can. No question.
Yes.
The answer is yes every single time, but still click on my video. That's the big thing that I've noticed. Like, I have an original OG Pixel. I have no problems about the photos, no problems about the computer, no problems about any of that. But boy, that battery life. the battery life. Yep. We definitely need upgrades in that space. I don't know anything other than gaming that you would notice, but like, I'm not a big gamer when it comes to that. Like, I play Among Us and Roblox with the kids, but that's about the extent of my gaming. But
well, that's kind of the good segue, Scott. Yeah, it's almost like you host your own like live streams and you guide these kinds of conversations. I love it when I have other content creators on, because it's like where a conversation of ours naturally goes.
Yeah.
It makes me look like I'm a great interviewer, I'm really not.
You're phenomenal.
And then I like to call it out. So like, I like to point out what's happening here right now, because that's how good interviews work. That's exactly where I got so excited that you wanted to jump on board doing a phone challenge.
Yeah,
I put my first phone challenge out kind of as it was one part just like the frustration of continuously saying this and then not doing it. You know, like, I'm telling people, do more with your phones. You can do more with your phones. I've got to do something to demonstrate that.
Yeah.
And then when you kind of caught on to the idea, your first concept, I was just blown away. Like, that is such a fun kind of challenge. You already have your challenge video out. People can already go and catch it. But if you don't mind, talk people through, what is your challenge? What are you asking someone to do with their phones?
Yeah. So the big challenge, again, I saw yours with the make a podcast on your phone, and actually that video inspired me to make my entire 4A 5G 6 month review video completely on the Pixel 4A 5G.
It's so good.
But because I did it by default, like, I did it on purpose, because so you inspired me. I was like, you know what? That's a really great idea. So I'm going to do an entire 6 months. I walked around in the middle of a field at like a school. I'm sure that I look like a weirdo, but the point is like, that's filmed in 4K 30. It looks phenomenal. Like, it looks great. You did the podcast idea. We both love video. So this is where phone challenge number two was born. It's to create a 10 to 15 second intro using just your phone. Now people, again, tend to go, oh man, I don't even know how to edit. I don't know how to do any of those things. I don't know what software to use. My video talks about some of the different softwares that you can use for iOS or Android. For my example, I use Adobe Rush. Now, full disclosure, I am not an Adobe person. I don't use Premiere Pro. I use Final Cut Pro. So there's where I had to really, I had to teach myself how to use Adobe Rush. Mm-hmm. I learned it in about 30 minutes. 30 minutes playing around with some of these thoughts. Like, okay, I have this idea that I want to do this cool transition between, you know, Pixel devices and then showcase, like, hey, this is my channel. It's about 12 seconds. It's 12 seconds, mm-hmm. 12 or 13 seconds. The idea is to show you with just a little bit of planning and a little bit of thought. It's not the phone that stops you from making the content. It's not the phone. The mid-tier phone can handle it. No questions handle it. I edit it. I shot it. I edit it. I rendered it while I was on social media using my Pixel 5. The Pixel 5, the 765G, the inferior chip that doesn't have enough power to do anything. Yeah, no, I did it all. It's rendered it out full 4K.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like, I did my very first video on the Pixel 4a from the Pixel 4a, edited on the Pixel 4a, and rendered on the Pixel 4a. And I kept waiting for that moment where I was going to hit the roadblock. Way back in the day, when I was at Pocket Now, we did an iPad Pro video. Like, could we actually, as video professionals, could we use an iPad Pro to really get this done? And we kept like hitting this wall. Like, if I need to do this, then I need this and I can't do that. And we couldn't quite finish the video on the iPad. That's gone now.
Oh, way gone. Absolutely.
$350 phone, Pixel 4a 5G, Pixel 5, these underpowered mid-ranger chipsets. Mm-hmm. No issues.
None.
Zero issues. Getting from soup to nuts.
Yeah, you could do, if you had a 4a 5G, you could film a full 4K video, a $500 device, render it completely out. It would look like 4K. Yeah. No one would know the difference. No one. The bokeh,
well, I can see some of the compression in the black shadow crush.
That's exactly what would happen. But you know what most people would be like? Man, that looks really, really good.
It's great.
And you can see it constantly. Right here, I use a, if you watch my live shows, I use a Canon EOS R. Everything's in 4K. I have stats in studio filmed on a secondary camera. That secondary camera is an iPhone. I constantly have people tell me how much better he looks. And that's on a phone. And it's like, folks, there's so much power in your phones. You're barely scratching the surface.
And so it's been interesting because, and I'd like to hear your thoughts a little on this too, because I feel like I'm of two minds on video. Like, for example, on my Discord, I just recently shared, these kids were in the smartphone filming subreddit, and they showed off like this video project that they did for school. And it's two kids, a Galaxy S10 and a motorized gimbal. And then it's this like cornball school project, but they're lining up shots, they're doing a tracking pan, they're doing ground level, they're doing like for like that extreme perspective. One of them's holding like this Nerf gun, and it's just so cornball and over the top, but it looks like the exact camera angle you would have seen out of John Wick. Oh, how intense, the barrel's pointing like right at the camera. And you're like, that's two nerdy kids, almost 3-year-old phone. The shots look way better than they should. So I understand, like, there's a side of that where it's about like the next generation of filmmakers are starting with phones. The other side of it is also just the idea of archiving memories. Like my daughter's entire life is in 4K video. I've never shot her in 1080p. I want to share those moments with her as she gets older and she can understand her own history.
I mean, many of you know, like, there was another creator in our channel. His name was Greg. He was my best friend. I loved him dearly, and I miss him very much. He passed away on April 10th of 2019. He was 36. He was not old at all. He had four kids. His youngest was a month old when he passed away. That child's never going to know his dad, but I have over 85 hours worth of video and then hundreds, if not thousands, of photos of our two families interacting with each other to be able to show them, this is what your dad was like. This is how funny your dad was. And how many times do we know and we hear of people that desperately are holding on to a voicemail from 10, 15, 20 years ago because it's the last voice that they have of that individual. But because of the time that we're in right now, I can pick up my phone and I can capture a memory, a moment for later in time for to go, I remember that we did yada, 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 and then joke about whatever it is. Or God forbid this happens, have the moment that I just talked about. The person is not here anymore. Mm-hmm. We have 85 hours worth of them laughing and telling jokes and seeing how incredibly smart they are, how incredibly articulate they are, how goofy and corny and nerdy all of them are. We have that moment and it lives and walks with us in our pockets every day. I can do everything from my phone. And contrary to what people believe, you don't need the most powerful phone. And that's what I didn't really understand with the Pixel 5 is like, you know, it's only phones and things like that. I mean, I get what my shot was, but the idea is like, that's still 4K footage. Like, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That is still 4K footage and it rendered out
4K footage.
Yeah, rendered out in 4K. And it was probably that 13 seconds took 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, maybe. Like, I'll be honest, I don't even know how long it actually took because I was doing other things on the phone.
And again, it's like being able to share that we've trained an audience to think that this is a bridge too far. So to kind of bring this all home,
sure.
your challenge.
I want them to create a video using just your phone. Better. Got to render it. I really love it. If you would shoot it, render it, edit it all on the phone. Show me how you do it. You got all the options. Go check out my video, how to do it in each respective system. Then once you do that, upload it somewhere. Probably not Twitter compression, but something like YouTube, Google Photos, if you want. However, you can give us access to it. Find me on Twitter. Find Juan on Twitter. Tag us both. Say, this is my video for it. I'm going to do 10 days from Saturday. So I don't do math at this point. So 10 days from when my video launched and all the description or all the details are in the description. I'm going to give you a $75 gift card, who we choose, to Amazon.
Dig it.
There you go. That's what it is. It's like, I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to give you something like, you know, Juan gave the microphone. And as you can tell, like I have a hard time tolerating bad, bad audio. So that is like the best thing right there. But then you can take the $75 from winning my challenge and you can buy something for your phone. There's a ton of different mobile content creator stuff that's out there. I have a ton of videos on my channel that talks about all these different accessories that you can get with your phone, and you can make quality content using just your phone.
And I know you're gonna dig this. I know you're gonna
love it.
All of the people that are gonna be sending you things, it's just gonna blow your mind how many people have actually finished cool little projects with their phones, and they're so proud, and you're so proud for them, and it's like, much love.
That's my thing. It's like, I want to see this, and maybe this is one of those things, like this challenge, these individual challenges, getting people to go out there and really capture the content that they've always had the ability to do. And maybe this inspires them to do something a little bit more. And you never know what might come out of this.
I was a little anxious if anyone else would kind of pick up on it or if anyone else would want to do something like this. And as soon as I got a few folks saying like, hey, that's kind of neat. And then you just ran with it.
Yeah, that's what I did. I was like, I didn't even ask. I was just like, I'm doing this thing. My bad. I didn't know if I was supposed to ask, but I just did it anyway.
But that's exactly what I was hoping for.
Cool.
Thank you. And I appreciate you. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what people come up with.
Me too. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, it just sort of reset itself there. Yes. Oh, thank you so much, Scott, for jumping on this. I, like I said, I was really excited to see him take this and run with it. And again, it was adorably like that, where he had started already making a video to do a challenge before he even asked me, like, hey, I know you did this first on your channel, but you know, I'm going to do it now. It was sort of the tone of the conversation. He was just like, I'm just taking this. It's mine now. So I was really stoked that he was game, that he was interested in this. So this is phone challenge too, to make you, it's not even making a full video, and I've already seen some of the clips that have been sent in. Scott's gotten some of the submissions, like one of them was even shared out of Instagram, and it's so good. I mean, like, what this person shot, composed, did all these video transitions. Really killer. I mean, just like phenomenally good stuff. And so just as a fun project, he's not asking you to put together a full review. He's not asking you to do like a 10-minute video. It's nothing that intense. Like, you put together the intro for a video series that maybe doesn't even exist. And so I was joking around in the comments, like, if I do one, I kind of want to, my mom is an amazing quilter. Like, I kind of want to do, like, if she had her own quilting show, like, I would, what would her intro look like? It's fun because it's kind of just sparking those little, like, well, what could I do and how would I pull that off? And even just thinking about it, you're already considering the usage of a phone that's far and away more advanced than what we usually talk about for electronics and for gadgets and stuff. So I'm stoked for him too, because like when you really sit and watch this stuff, just like I was, when I was really sitting and listening to all the podcasts that came in, it was hard not getting like a little choked up about it, not getting a little emotional. Like, people really putting their effort out there, people really rising to the occasion. And so I think Scott's going to have a really good time looking at all of this, all this content coming his way. So I'm really stoked. The link is going to be in the show notes, but if you go to Scott's channel, Technically Speaking, excuse me, really want to try and send some content his way. Scott completely restructured like his live stream schedule, the types of videos that he was doing, kind of backing off some of the more traditional YouTubery stuff. And his commentary, I think his commentary has never been more fun to engage with, but you look at his channel stats and I don't think they've ever been lower. You know, like, I'm looking at one of his video streams, like getting 130 views, but it's all about this really great tips and tricks for using better gear to improve your photos and videos. And you're like, this video should be performing better. It's a good video and it's a really good look at the topic, and 100 views on a channel with 20,000 subscribers is pretty weak sauce. So I normally don't just like say, hey, let's take advantage of the algorithm and let's try and rig it. I mean, that's not what I'm saying. I would hope that, you know, give Scott a sub, thumbs up some of his content, maybe click the bell icon, you know, like some participation, because he's making good stuff and he's hosting some really engaged conversations. And I think it's more deserving of awareness than what YouTube's going to do for him. Dave Burns, people that would want to connect with his community are being led into a different, more bland auditorium. And Barry, yeah, again, Peachy is solid. It's funny too, because like he's kind of like I was with LG, but with the Pixel, right? He wears his Pixel fandom on his sleeve. And I feel like that's an underrepresented voice. When I say nice things about a Pixel in one of my videos, I get this outpouring of, oh man, I'm so glad you actually gave the phone a fair shot. Or I've been trying to tell people this is a cool thing about the Pixel and no one listens to me. Like there's no surprise that if you go to a tech blog and they just slam LG constantly and they slam Pixel and Motorola and every other brand, they're slamming OnePlus right now. OnePlus is definitely one of the whipping boys in LG's absence. And then you like talk to them, it's like, yeah, man, our LG coverage gets like no traffic. People just don't care about OnePlus or Motorola. Like, we put out reviews and then people don't watch them. And you're like, yeah, because you're talking to people that mostly already own the phone, telling them what a terrible, terrible decision they've made in buying that phone. And they probably like the phone. No big surprise, they're not coming back to look at the rest of your content. So it's really funny. Like, we're learning the wrong lessons from all of this social media manipulation of our content and feed. And it hurts channels like Scott's. technically speaking, with 20,000 subscribers, technically speaking, should be hitting a lot harder than they currently are. So I hope you'll go and check it out. But more than anything else, I hope you'll participate. Make something. It doesn't need to be perfect. It doesn't need to be the most amazing intro sequence. My intro sequence for my videos is a black screen and then a pop sound effect and the title, Some Gadget Guy in Green Letters. You have to be able to beat that. Every single of the 49 people that are currently streaming this just on Twitch, all 49 of you should be able to beat my intro pop for the videos on my channel. That is the gauntlet that I am throwing down here. You have to be so amazingly terrible at using a phone if you cannot beat my intro of green text. So prove me right. Dave Burns, you dare to overestimate me. Oh no. Literally anything beyond green font should be able to beat the intro on my videos. McCorcoran 3 nails it. Creating art makes your soul grow. A quote from Kurt Vonnegut. From Loki Ted, I'll use a fart sound effect in place of the pop sound effect in my intro. Still better. Still more of a commentary on what you might be talking about if you choose that sound effect instead of the one that I'm using. Still an improvement. Again, more consideration than anything that's going in. From Paul Puri, I'll make a popping sound effect and the name of my channel in CGI, Q Explosion. You throw an explosion effect on your intro, it's going to be more effort than what I put into mine. But again, you can sit here and joke about it. Literally, in the time that you've been taking to joke about putting a fart sound effect behind green text, you could have already done it. Like, seriously, you could have opened up an app on your phone, put in, you know, the name of your channel, Heike, and then, you know, you go and find a fart. You could have already rendered this and submitted a contest entry for Scott's contest here. But again, I'm wanting people to step up and actually try. I am not interested in someone. I mean, again, it's funny to make those jokes, but I am not interested in someone sending Scott a bunch of fart videos just because, like, it would be real funny if I didn't really do your contest, brah. And something tells me he'll disqualify anything that's kind of like stupid low effort or is kind of making fun of what he's trying to accomplish here. But seriously, like, do it. I have a wide shot of a field behind your house and, you know, do like a little text in kind of a cinematic, you know, bordered font. That's an intro. You thought about it, you crafted it, you framed it, you shot the video, you put text on top of it, you rendered it and uploaded it. And that shows effort and it satisfies creativity. And it's something that people struggle with when they're trying to do their own content on YouTube. And you can do it. Not only can you can do it entirely from a phone that costs $100. Again, it's trying to get this message out. I've said it before and I've shared this story on the podcast in the past, but my uncle found a box full of old film reels and slides from an old slide stills camera that my grandfather had. And I get to see my grandfather and my grandmother in their early 20s, maybe even their late teens, dancing. And they're cutting a rug swing style with some jitterbug. And like, this is not the grandfather and grandmother that I know. I don't know those two young people with their whole lives ahead of them. But an old shoebox survived. And we were able to scan that content and digitize that content so we could play that content again. And then I look at my daughter and you're like, I want her to have some of that. The photos and videos that we were able to kind of save from when Marie and I were first getting together and, you know, digital cameras were just becoming a thing. And she can kind of see some of that. But her life, she's going to have access to the most memorable and exciting experiences that she got to grow up with. And someone pointed it out in the comments that there are a couple slow motion videos that I've shot of Lex. So there have been some moments where Lex was not captured in 1080p. But let me tell you that moving forward, even if I'm going to be shooting slow motion, it's still going to be in 4K from now on. I'm telling you, like, shooting her Easter egg hunt this year in 4K 120 and slowing that down to 30 frames per second is amazing. It's hilarious watching these little girls fight over Easter eggs. But anyway, that's the big contest. Scott, Phone Challenge 2. I want you to go check out his video. I want you to give him some thumbs up and participate and check out some of the stuff on his channel. And then I want you to try and make something. I want you to try and do something because, again, you know, it's not like you're going to do this forever. I'm not saying anyone's going to walk away from this challenge and be like, oh, I'm going to be a YouTuber and make all my money just doing online content creation. But you'll have learned something about your own abilities and your own storytelling. And I promise you, some of it's going to rub off. Some of it's going to transfer. The next time you think about, like, hey, let me shoot this video at a birthday party, instead of just sending like 2 minutes of, you know, unedited footage of people singing happy birthday with like shaky phone cam, you're going to trim the head and tail. Maybe you'll throw on a sticker. Maybe you'll put in some text. Maybe you'll cut up a couple little slices of B-roll so that it's singing happy birthday under it, but then there are close-ups of people like laughing and smiling on top of a birthday cake. And that effort is going to be greatly appreciated by your other family and friends. It matters. Again, I shared Easter egg hunt video most recently, and my family got such a kick out of that. It's little girls fighting over Easter eggs set to beautiful opera in 1/4 slow motion at insanely high quality. That 4K high quality. It looks awesome. So, yeah, I feel like we're kind of coming to the end here. I had a couple other stories here. Excuse me. Like, there's an update. Sennheiser is going to be selling off their consumer audio division. Excuse me. I'm trying to catch my breath here, and I've got a, like, kind of a burp and a hiccup that are both fighting right now. And it's not, I don't know which one will win, but whichever one does, we all lose. Yeah, Sennheiser is going to be selling off and kind of operating under a company that works on hearing aids. That could be kind of interesting just to keep an eye on as we look at like the next generation of noise reduction technologies. And then there was also the story about Microsoft shelving Windows 10X. I think I'm going to save that for next week. We can kind of talk about more like Windows on ARM and where mobile computing should go, how I hope that eventually we'll get like a Windows phone again if Windows is on ARM. But we'll save that as we kind of wrap this up here. Boing by RIP old man Senny. Maybe stand up. Let that diaphragm stretch. I'm just going to stretch. Ugh. And Dave Burns, yeah, they're going to shelve Windows 10X. So from Microsoft, they're saying that whatever direction they're going to head in, this is one of the projects that's just going to be kind of backburnered. I haven't heard language that it's getting totally canceled, but it's Microsoft. So as soon as something sort of falls out of that kind of focus, then you move on. Whether or not that means we get a Neo or a Surface Duo 2 or some other type of follow-up product, we'll have to see. But folks, this has been a really fun podcast to put together. I love it when I can also do one of these like pre-recorded segments, join you guys in the chat directly for a bit. It's just really fun to kind of shake things up. I'm really excited next week. I've got a sponsor that I'm really excited about. Oh, and actually, funnily enough, the sponsor is a video editing app. It's kind of a plug-in service that helps you do really fast, like keyframes, punch-ins, cropping, zooming, and it's pretty effective at helping you like trim the content of a single video. So that is going to be at the head of my podcast next week. I would get excited, you know, like, oh, someone wants to advertise on my podcast. That's kind of fun. Sponsors are kind of fun. And then I get to buy food for my family. So be on the lookout for some more content coming up. I've got my OnePlus 9 sort of comprehensive wrap-up review after a couple updates, getting the camera review out. I am going to have audio reviews for the OnePlus 9 Pro and for the Black Shark. So I've got the samples. I've just got to do the relaxed fit speaking to camera recording. So those will be out on the Patreon, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. And then I'm finally going to be wrapping up another wireless lavalier mic. This little wireless Bluetooth enabled transmitter recorder. It's a really great little product. Again, competing in that space against where I've been really excited by Rode and Samson and Comica. Another option that I think is going to be pretty solid, a little more expensive, but still pretty solid. So some good stuff. I'll kind of come into a head as my family figures out how we're going to pack up and move. And at some point, all of this in my background is going to change. So it'll be fun. I have no idea what it's going to look like. It's going to be scary. So thanks so much, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, for contributing. This chat is always soul replenishing for me, getting to kind of mix it up and see the comments that y'all post. And then also that last plug to try and get out there sometime this week. Do something to participate, to share, to contribute. If it's on Glowing Rectangles, if it's on the subreddit, that's great. But also just for anyone's individual channel, check in on some channels that maybe you haven't seen in your YouTube recommendations. Peek in on some of the creators that maybe aren't getting the algorithm push that that you think that they might deserve. There's this really rich conversation that's happening, but it's kind of getting shoved into the background of whatever popularity metric is running most aggressively that day. And I think we all can. I think we can all make a little bit of effort. A like, a thumbs up, a tweet, a share, a Reddit post, a comment, something to encourage some kind of attention for the people out there that are making really cool stuff. I'm preaching to the choir. I know y'all are out there. It's just pushing. You know, being the change we want to see in the world. That's where I'm at. And, you know, write your elected officials. Tell them you support right to repair, net neutrality, and smarter regulations for telecoms. It's probably the thing to do. All right, folks, let's wrap that up there before I just re-record the entire podcast. I want you all to have an amazing week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your tech. I want you to be awesome with your tech. And I hope to see everyone back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Take care. Be well. Go do something fun. And I hope to catch you back here next week. I love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.